Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Drake May talking yesterday in his media availability about how he wants to be a passer. We know he's a good passer. It's not like he's a bad passer. But one thing that is starting to come into focus here is that Drake May, through three starts, is already becoming a bit of a elite rushing quarterback. And I only say a bit because it's a small sample size. But since taking over as the starter in week six, May has run for 209 yards on 21 carries. That's 10 yards per carry, basically. It's 9.95 yards per carry. That's first among quarterbacks. Ben Volen said May is averaging a first down every time he tucks and runs. It's true. That's his average. However, he leads all quarterbacks with at least 20 carries in percentage of rushes for first downs. Not only that, only Jalen Hurts and Bo Nix have run for more first downs total than May since the rookie year, since the rookie took over in week six. Over that same stretch, no quarterback has run for more yards. Not Nix, not Hurts, not Lamar Jackson, not Jaden Daniels, nobody other than Drake May. So since he's made his debut in the league, he is the leading rusher out of every quarterback in the league. He's rushed for more yards than any QB in the league, in a league where rushing quarterbacks are certainly not rare. You know, it's not the 90s where he had, or the 80s where he had like Bobby Douglas and Randall Cunningham and nobody else. Like, this is a very common thing you see now. And he's number one after just three games. And over the course of those three games.
And he would have had more, I think, had he not gotten hit
right
and hurt.
Right.
Because that game he was running. That was the game he had what was that touchdown run? That was 40 yard?
It was something like that. Yeah, right.
So he was running a lot in that game. That was going to be an aspect of that game. Now, I do think it's interesting that people are learning him on the fly, because I don't know how people didn't realize he could run. And that was a thing in the draft when the Josh Allen comparison, people were like, oh, he doesn't run like Josh Allen. Well, he doesn't run like him. But he had 22 rushing touchdowns. They weren't all Tom Brady-like one-yard tush-push QB sneaks.
Right.
He is a runner. He's an athlete. I mean, I was just looking it up because he feels like a guy that should have a nickname but doesn't have any nicknames. I was looking it up. Like, I was even Googling nicknames in high school, nicknames in North Carolina. Like, there's no nicknames out there for Drake May.
Really?
And he's so athletic.
Seems
and
like
so good, he should.
Drake and May.
Yes.
Both rhyme with lots of stuff.
And he runs. He's athletic. He's fun. It feels like a guy that should have multiple nicknames.
Yeah.
And he's got nothing.
It's tough now because Drake is, after the summer that he had.
Yeah.
Drake the rapper, it's tough to, right? I mean, like, you can't call him Drizzy. Then it's like, don't call me that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to.
You could even go down the Drake's Cakes
Cakes.
Right?
That would be.
I don't know if you could utilize that.
Objectifying
but
him a little bit.
May. Whatever.
Big D.
Check out Drake's.
Even that.
Drake's Cakes.
But you know what I mean? It's just weird to me that he's such a good athlete. Such a good player, high profile, was going to be a top pick for 2 years at North Carolina, and there's nothing. Now, there was one in the chat, my guy Dubs985. We're now best buddies. He used to hate me. Now we're kind of friends.
Hey, winning people over one Twitch troll at a time.
That's right. He said Vanilla Vic. Uh-huh. I feel like that's been used before on other people, hasn't it?
Who else was Vanilla Vic?
I don't know.
I can't think of anybody.
I feel like somebody else used to be called Vanilla Vic, and I don't like it. Because he's not a Vic-like runner.
No.
That's not the style of runner.
Right. Like, Justin Fields is a Vic-like runner. You know, someone who's...
Yeah.
Kyler Murray or somebody. Someone
right.
who's really fast.
Fields would probably be the closest for me.
I'd say Murray's right up there. But, like, yeah, he's not that fast. He's fast. And he's deceptively fast because he's so tall. But he's not Michael Vick fast. Like, not
so I feel like we should take this on as a group project.
Okay.
Twitch chatters, texters, callers, us. The afternoon program here at WEEI, we need to, because we talked to him, so we would have the ability to present potential nicknames to him next Monday. Can we come up with nickname ideas? We need a list of nicknames for Drake May. Use Drake, use May. I don't know if we want to go down the race road, the Vanilla Vic thing. I don't know if we want to, he's a white scrambling quarterback. Fran Tarkenton.
In fairness, Vanilla is more a flavor than a race, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, but I think
I know,
it's
I know
because
what you're getting at, yeah.
There was a reason for that.
I know what it was, yeah.
Yeah, what was what's his name? White Chocolate?
Jason Williams.
Williams.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, when you're white, they often put that sort of vanilla or white or something in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like he's a guy that deserves a nickname in New England. Now, Brady didn't have great nicknames.
White Lightning.
But he's not really lightning.
No.
He's not that fast.
It's true.
Great White Hype. Wasn't that a movie or something?
Wonder yes. Bread.
I don't know if we want Wonder Bread.
No.
I don't hate that,
Wonder
actually.
Bread.
I like Wonder Bread.
Yeah?
I kind of do.
Yeah, all right. How about Wonder Bread?
But why does it always have to
why
be about
him? Why does that have a racial connotation, too?
Because he's white.
I know, but bread is just bread. Like, that doesn't, you know, it's not really about the color of the bread.
Wonder Bread, though, is specifically, it's like
Wonder
it's
Bread's
white,
the bread.
White.
That's like the whitest
bread. It's the whitest of bread.
Oh, it is the whitest of breads.
So, see, immediately everybody goes to white nicknames.
Yeah.
Why can't he just have a nickname based on, like, he's big, he's athletic, he's Drake, he's May?
Crest White Strip.
No, we're not doing
that.
Why are you fixating on the white part?
I don't know. Now I can't think of anything else.
Think of Drake.
White chocolate.
No, we're not doing that. White sweetness. Sweetness.
White sweetness?
Something like that.
Because he's Walter Payton now?
Well, let me just, we're spitballing here.
Okay.
This is what you do with, like, an idea session. You just throw stuff out there.
No bad ideas.
No, there's bad ideas.
There are bad ideas.
I've had, like, three of them in the last 5 seconds. But, yeah.
The White Stallion.
We can work on that.
You like that?
The White Stallion, that's
as
a little on the nose.
The
not that bad.
Stallion.
It's all right. Yeah, I don't know. I'll keep thinking about it. So far, I don't know if anything's beaten Wonder Bread.
Nothing. Drizzy Drake and the, what?
Hmm?
The Ivory Drake.
And the
Slivery.
That one's not bad.
There's a lot of them, but people do tend to include the whiteness part.
Yeah, that's true. I'm guilty. I was just doing it, too. Anyway.
But yes, he can run.
If there's a scouting report on Drake May, if other teams are looking at, like, the Bears, right? They have tape on Drake May now. He's not some new guy. They don't know what he does. They're not sure what he's capable of. I think at this point, maybe when they're a rookie, like, before they've played, mm-hmm. you say, well, we don't know what kind of pro he's going to be like. And I didn't expect him to be able to run like this in the NFL. He was doing that in the ACC. I wasn't expecting he'd be able to do it so easily in the NFL. I was pleasantly surprised by that. But no one's going to be surprised by that anymore. No one's going to be like, oh, Drake May, we weren't ready for his running ability. They keep someone in the front, spying on the quarterback. They, you know, contain, you know, on the edges there and other things that you do when you have a running quarterback. I wonder how that's going to affect this game, because I feel like if they zero in on that, the Patriots' offense is not very multidimensional. You know, it's really just Drake May running, and that's about it. That's been the thrust of what they do offensively for about 2 weeks.
So you had me thinking, because a lot of times you say, oh, you get a mobile quarterback, a guy who runs. Well, we want to keep him in the pocket, make him beat us with his arm.
Right.
I think he has shown the ability to beat you with his arm. Now, I would ask, by extension, is the rest of the offense ready to beat you with their hands if mm-hmm. he's throwing? Technically, if you're the Patriots, by the way, would stink defending Drake May, because they do not have a controlled pass rush. He would be running around on the edges all day long against the Patriots pass defense if he ever had to face that pass defense.
Yeah.
Because I think the way to approach Drake May right now would be to control pass rush him, right? Try to keep him in the pocket. Do have a spy ready, because I don't think you want to not rush him.
Yeah.
Because the weakness of the team is the offensive line.
Right.
You want to take advantage of your matchups. If Jeffrey Simmons and company can kick the crap out of the Patriots offensive line, you should take advantage of that matchup defensively. But I think him running is the best part of the Patriots offense right now. And I don't even think it's close. Even him throwing is not consistent enough, in part because he's inconsistent, mm-hmm. but also in part because his targets are inconsistent.
And
so,
his timing is inconsistent because he doesn't have a lot of time to set his feet and throw.
Right.
I mean, some of his better passes this year have been off the back foot because he's had pressure in his face. Like, he hasn't had a lot of throws where he sets his feet and can do make his progressions and do what he wants to. I feel like that's rare.
And throw on time, on platform, like, I'm on my back foot, I'm scanning the field, boom, step throw.
You watch these other games, like this game tonight here with Baltimore and the Bengals. You know, we're going to be watching this one. You forget sometimes watching the Patriots how other passing offenses work. You know, like it's just,
oh, yeah.
You get a chance, you have a stud wide receiver over here, at the very least someone who you feel good about, who's reliable, who you know, if you get the ball to him in stride, he's going to catch it and pick up some yards or maybe break a tackle or whatever. But you know you're going to have enough time to set your feet, look around, find the guy you want to, hit him, and that's it. Drake May, as good as he looks, hasn't been able to do that very much, like, on average. It just seems like, and Brissett didn't either, in fairness, but it just seems like all their highlight plays, Brissett too, Brissett's best play this year was the safety blitzing, drilling him in the knees as he bombs it out to Booty on the 2-yard line. Like, that was his best play of the year. May's best plays of the year. He's running around. He's got pressure on him. Like, that's the way it's been so far.
Because they're not good. They can't run the ball. And then Alex Van Pelt was talking about this today. Because they can't run the ball, they can't be a play-action team. They wanted to be a play-action team, but they're not a play-action team because play-action, I think he said you have to earn the right to run play action by actually running the football.
Yeah.
They haven't been able to do that. That's why I think there's too much pressure on Drake May, and I don't mean the physical. I mean, he is the offense. Everything's off script, and I don't You don't want that to be his game. He is not Michael Vick. He is not just, roll out there and go do crazy stuff, right? Kyler Murray, even at times in his career. That's not Justin Fields. That's not who Drake May is. Mm-hmm. He's capable of running,
yep.
But it shouldn't be the foundation of your freaking offense.
Yeah.
And that's what it feels like it's been.
Even someone like Jackson, who's a great runner, a talented runner. He's fast. He's faster than May. Like, he's, you know, he's up there with the Fields of the world, I think, in terms of speed. They bring in running backs for him. They brought in Mark, what was the guy from the Saints? The big running back
they had.
What the hell
from
was
from Alabama.
Name? Yeah.
Ingram.
And Mark Ingram, thank you. Derrick Henry, you know, they bring in these guys to sort of offset that. And that helps. I mean, that helps, first of all, because Jackson's a good thrower. But second of all, because now you have this other option. You have to keep your eye on him, and they can read option and go the other way or do whatever they want to do, and you just don't know where the attack's coming from. With Drake May, you know exactly where it's coming from. It's coming from him. And if they hand it off to Stevenson or Gibson or whoever else, you stuff him at the line. That's it. So I wonder, when defenses adjust to this, and we'll see if the Bears do this weekend, I wonder what that's going to look like, and I wonder how Drake May is going to react to it. Because so far, it's been working pretty well. It's been a big part of what's made him successful.
Are you keeping up with the text line?
I'm not keeping up with the text line.
Flying in with nicknames.
Oh,
ideas.
Boy. Okay. All right.
They're not all great. In fact, I'm not sure any of them are great.
Shaking Drake. Drake the Snake. The Driving Drake. May of Irish descent means proud or honorable. Okay.
Maybelline, because he's so purdy.
Drake Mayhem. Mayday. Amazing. May yo game day be delicious. Oh, I added that one. Dapper Drake, Dazzling Drake. Don't like any of these. These are all, bad. Dr. Mayhem, Glacier May, Smooth as Ice. That makes it sound like you're slow.
What about Call Me Maybe?
I do remember that song. Gumby.
None of them are good.
Yeah, these are all terrible. I'm sorry.
Maybe this is why he doesn't have a nickname.
That could be.
I'm sure somewhere along the way, somebody in his high school town, like the local paper, was like, hey, we should come up with a nickname with this kid. And all the interns sat around and then were like, yeah, there's really no good nicknames for this kid.
Right.
Are you guys going to ask him on Monday?
I will ask him
absolutely.
On Monday.
Yes.
We know what Christian Gonzalez nicknamed him.
Oh, that's right.
Right?
That's right. Draco.
Draco.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Oh, it's, Andy knows. Andy, you know what Draco means.
You know what the
means.
Draco means, Mr. Second Amendment over there?
He's in the street. Yeah.
What does Draco mean?
A Draco is a small, it's basically like a small AK, right? It's like a pistol, but it's an AK. It's like an automatic pistol, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's like a handheld AK.
Oh, I don't hate it.
Yeah. It was funny because the Midday Show asked Christian Gonzalez about it, and he's like, yeah, Draco. Keith was like, oh, like Harry Potter? And he's like, no, not like Harry Potter, actually.
So he's got a gun.
Yeah. It's
okay.
It's not terrible.
It's fine.
It's not terrible.
Well, I mean, remember, you're still allowed to have gun nicknames in this day and age, aren't you?
Yeah.
Remember AK-47?
Bazooka Joe is on the team, too. You got Draco and Bazooka Joe. It's a very violent quarterback.
Role. Well, Andre, what the hell is his last name? AK-47 with the...
Andre Kirilenko.
Yeah.
Right. That was number 47. His initials were AK, but yeah, it was a perfect one. Yeah, that was a good one.
Even Brady, some people called him Tommy Gunn, right?
Who called him Tommy Gunn?
I think somebody did.
Tommy Gunn fought Rocky in Rocky
V.
Yeah.
That's a great movie, one of the underrated movies of all time.
It is, except for when...
I didn't hear no bell.
Except for when the spirit of Mickey comes to him while he's rolling around on the ground. I didn't love that.
You knock him down. Why don't you try knocking me down?
Yeah.
I didn't hear no bell.
We'll keep working on
one
it.
One more round, Tommy Gunn.
Right now, it's between Wonder Bread and Draco, so we'll see what ends up winning out. 617-779-7937. Here is Stiz with what's trending, and when we return, Gerard Mayo's talking about a sense of urgency with this team and... Tommy Curran joins the show. That's all coming up next.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Here's what's trending this hour on WEEI and WEEI.com. So much for the Jason Tatum revenge game as the Celtics suffer a home loss to the Warriors, losing 118 to 112. Jason Tatum had 32 points. Derek White had 26. Steph Curry finished the night with 27. Derek White spoke after the game on the loss.
I mean, every game's a different test, and you learn something new from every game. And obviously, they're a really good team, and they're playing well right now. So it's all those little things that we talked about in training camp that came back and got us at the end there.
Celtics will stay in Boston. They will host the Brooklyn Nets tomorrow night. Tip-off at 7:30 from the Garden. The Bruins will host the Flames tonight. Puck drops at 7 p.m. from Causeway Street. Boston looking to recover from a 4-0 shutout loss against the Maple Leafs the other night. Korpisalo expected to get the start in net for your Boston Bruins. There were three DMPs during yesterday's Patriots practice. Those names included Kyle Duggar, Christian Ellis, and John Michael Hasty. Seven other players were limited. The Patriots will take on the Bears on Sunday afternoon. Kickoff at 1 p.m. from Soldier Field. And some Thursday night football tonight as the 4-5 Bengals will be in B-more to take on the 6-3 Ravens. Kickoff at 8:15. You can catch that game right here on WEEI FM. Our Westwood One coverage will begin at 7:30. Or you can download the Odyssey app and you can take us wherever you go. I'm Stiz. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoon show with Arkan and Hart, including Tom Curran Live, coming up.
Now, more of Afternoons with Arkan and Hart on WEEI.
Gerard Mayo feeling a sense of urgency. Interesting. Wonder what that is. You're 2-7 team. You're playing the Bears this weekend. No one's considering you. You're down there at the bottom, lumped in with all these other teams that are now going to be trying to lose out and get the number one pick. What urgency is Gerard Mayo feeling? Or is he trying to just instill that in his players so they don't go out and get embarrassed this weekend? I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is, but I found the word choice interesting. We've been talking about a sense of urgency all week. Sense of urgency. Got to have a sense of urgency. Well, what's so urgent? You know, what's so urgent for Gerard Mayo? Do you get a talking to?
Well, I think you could surmise that. That's possible, that he's feeling some heat. I also think you could take it in a more granular sense. And there was a cut I listened to that I don't think you've heard yet. So this is from Patriots.com in a little sit down with Mayo. And he was asked about last week's game. And I think this may tie into what you're talking about and why he would feel some urgency and why he'd want to impart some urgency on his players.
Now, there were plays to be made. And I always tell these guys, it's not just one play. You know, you can say the 2-point, go for it, don't go for it. You can say, you know, booty knocked the ball down. But there were so many plays in there that could change the outcome of the game that we just didn't make. And it falls on me to get the guys to focus. You know, the average play is 6 seconds per play.
Right.
Focus for six second increments. Give it everything you have, and hopefully the outcome will turn out different.
So it's more of a play on the field thing.
Yeah, and right? I think it was really interesting that he brought up booty.
Yeah.
So you and I,
that is interesting.
I think initially
we both dismissed that, yeah.
Talked about it, then yesterday kind of dismissed it like, I don't even know what he could have done. Well, the head coach just brought it up and said he could have knocked the ball down, and I'm sorry.
I don't think he could have, but.
But the head coach thinks he could.
Yeah.
The head coach didn't like the way Booty handled that final play. And for him, that's an example of a lack of urgency, a lack of realizing any one action, player, play can affect the game. And I think that's where this urgency comment comes from. I don't think it's Jonathan Kraft or Robert Kraft told him, listen, if you don't, you promised WEEI you're going to win more than four games. If you don't win more than four games, you're out. I don't think he's out. I don't think he's going to be out. I actually think they've kind of righted the ship a little bit here. They are no longer teetering on mutiny and going down that road. And
who do you ever talk about that play? Do you ever say?
I haven't heard it. I haven't heard it yet. But they're also using a new. I haven't been down there on Wednesdays since they've instituted the post Ted Karras interviews are sort of not in the locker room. They're in the Revs locker room in front of a backdrop and open locker room. Maybe not quite what it was. So I need to.
Too many meat watchers. That's why.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently.
People
so
watching the meat.
Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And which I'm actually for them doing it in a different way. But it has
for them watching the meat.
No. Doing interviews in a different way to
all
prevent.
All right. Well,
the
that
meat.
Was not clear. You didn't say that exactly. But
well,
all right,
I mean, to each his own. Whatever you want to do, his, her, whatever. Go down any road you want. But no, I don't believe he has talked about it, and I think that's an indication the coach at least thought he could have done more, could have shown a little more effort. And I think that is where the urgency is coming, that forget the record, forget anything. Every 6 seconds, because that was I heard him talk about that multiple times this week, that a play is like 6 seconds. I'm really only asking you to give me your effort for 6 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that freaking hard to do? If you play offense, there's only 60 plays you might be in on. I'm not asking you to do a whole heck of a lot. You're a professional football player. And I think that is what he's trying to instill in his team, that they're not good enough to miss their opportunity. If you miss one play in the first quarter, That might be the difference for us. Because we're not going to overcome the mistakes. We're not going to make up for it later with all our talent and our high scoring. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The line is too fine. If anything, we're at a deficit. If anything, we're chasing, trying to win games here, trying to compete with other teams.
One last thought on that booty play, and this is probably beyond my purview, but I don't watch the All-22, but I did see one of those replays where it was just that side of the field.
Yep.
And it wasn't zoomed in all that much, but just based on where the safety came from, if Booty's looking up at the ball and the other guy comes from downfield and jumps in front of him, how's he supposed to even see that?
But even stop.
You're looking up at the ball. Like, if you're looking up here and then a guy comes up and jumps in front of you at the last second and picks it off.
Well, you do have, like, peripheral vision and, like, see things. But I think the issue is he didn't even really try to come back and stop and do anything.
Yeah.
Whether it's to catch the ball, break up a pass, hit a safety, he kind of, for lack of a better term, he Randy Mossed it. Oh, that ball's not getting to me. Nice throw, Andrew Walter, during that phase of his career, right?
Yeah.
That was kind of dismissive. And I think that's problematic for a young team, a young player, a scuffling team, a scuffling position group. They don't need any black marks against them. Mm-hmm. They've had more than a season's worth of black marks
sure.
in like six or seven games. So let's go above it. Let's be try-hard. Let's be the try-hard wide receiver room because they're not that right now. And I think their coach is kind of trying to spread that idea.
Yeah, I would agree with that. 617-779-7937. Tommy Curran's going to join us here in just a few minutes. So Jerod Mayo, then, when he talks about urgency, maybe more of an on-field thing.
Yeah.
Is there urgency to the season? Is there urgency in a game-by-game basis? Like, we look at this season and we take it for what it is. Like, are they talking about urgency in Vegas and Carolina and, you know, with these other teams with two wins this year? Like, is that something that's coming up for them? Or at this point in the season is now when you start thinking about your draft pick and thinking about where it's all going to finish and who's playing well in college football and all that sort of stuff?
Well, and that's where I think their transparency has hurt them.
Yeah.
From day one, he talked about a foundation. This year's about laying the foundation. Oh, it's not about winning? Well, it's about winning. I'm just not sure if it's winning games this year or next year.
Right.
Well, Jonathan Jones isn't going to be on the team next year. So right there, you're laying, and I'm not calling him out because I think he's a professional, but I think you created a world. Hell, you had Elliot Wolf before game one saying, we're going to play younger players later in the year. This week, you have Alex Van Pelt talking about the fine line and the balance between playing the guys that actually do give you the best chance to win versus developing young players, giving them reps that are valuable. Like, we accepted it at the quarterback position. We wanted more reps for Drake May. Now, we also believed he was the better quarterback, but we wanted to develop him, right? And when everybody knows one of your goals is to develop young players, there's an awareness that we're not 100% all in on trying to win every down, every game, right?
Yeah.
And as humans, you just know that. And while you may think it's not affecting the way you go about your business, don't you think it affects the way you go about your business?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's got to.
That's how I look. They're human beings. So there is not a sense of urgency because there hasn't been a sense of urgency from day one when they talked about what their goals were for the year. So, you know, that's only going to get less urgent as the year goes on, less urgent as you lose games and are going down the road of preparing for a draft pick.
Yeah, that's the way it is. You know, this is what the NFL is. This is what the other side of it looks like. We got a glimpse of it last year. A lot of times teams that are that bad don't just suddenly turn it around quickly. And I think you're seeing right now this Patriots team isn't going to be the Houston Texans. They're not going to be the Washington Commanders. They're not going to be one of those teams where it's a quick, quick turnaround. I was hoping for that. I was hoping we'd see steps taken towards that, and you really haven't. You really haven't in terms of the front office. You haven't in terms of the play on the field. You haven't in terms of the coaching. None of it has really pointed to, all right, a turnaround's really possible here, except for Drake May and his three games that he's played in the third of the season, which is what it's been. I mean, three games out of nine is not the majority of the snaps here, so it's nice to see him coming along, and I have no problem with his development and how long that may take and any mistakes or hiccups that come along the way. But that's it. This is not going to be one of those one season, oh my God, look at this, the new coach and the new quarterback are so good and everybody's going to want to play there next year and this is going to be a great thing going forward. And listen, with the Texans, they've taken a bit of a step back this year, I would say.
Yeah.
Not a big one. They're still a good team. They're still probably going to be a playoff team.
It's hard to win.
It's hard to win.
That's one of the things that this team has said that I think is most honest. It's really hard to win in the NFL,
right?
And they are fighting an uphill battle. But I just think even from a fan perspective, if you asked fans to talk about their memories of the first, what are they, played nine games of the year,
mm-hmm.
Would anybody mention the wins? I don't think they would. No. I think everybody would mention Drake May plays, runs by Drake May, throws by Drake May, incomplete passes by Drake May. Drake May is at the center of Patriot Nation right now, and we've joked about it. He's never finished a game and won. He started the one game that ended up being a victory. So even fans are well aware that this year is about developing and building something moving forward, but that inherently means there's not really any urgency.
Yeah, that's true. All right, joining us right now here on the hotline is your good friend and my good friend, Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston, Quick Slants, etc. He's brought to you by FlexCar. Save thousands with your flexible car lease at FlexCar.com and Drains by James, Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at DrainsByJames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Mr. Tom E. Curran, how are we doing today?
I'm great. I'm not sure which direction you're going to go, but it's funny. I'd love to pick up where Andy just left off with the notion of urgency and the fact that this is a developmental year.
That's exactly where I was going to start. So why don't you just go ahead and pretend.
The floor is
let's
yours.
Pretend I just asked a really good question, Tommy, and you go ahead and answer it. Yeah.
And I wasn't a dink about whatever you asked me and the way you asked me and everything else. Yeah,
right.
Good. That way I can not be a dink.
Perfect.
I think that that's something that really occurred to me this week when May played at the level he did. He's ready. He's ready to win. He's ready to lead a team. And I talked to people this week and they said, hey, look, there were plenty of things he could have done a little bit better out there that you might not be noticing as a layperson. And I do defer to that. But if he can put on a Superman cape for a team that is this completely lacking in talent and dominate a game in a way that very few can single-handedly do it, and I would, not comparing him to Brady, always that caveat, in a way that Brady necessarily couldn't do in the exact same fashion, then the urgency should be on everyone right now. There is no slow build-up that they needed to and wanted to engage in. I was talking week 13 or 14, maybe sometime in December, bring May in. He's ready now. So this should be a clarion call to ownership that if they have misgivings about offensive coordinators, wide receiver coaches, head coaches, defensive coordinators, direction of the team, GM, college director of player personnel, whoever, act on it. Don't give it another year to, well, maybe if he has another year without Bill around, he'll look a little bit better. No, you've already tried to see how everyone flourished post-Bill. You get 1 year to do that. And if you haven't done it by December, maybe don't pay your rent for January.
So, Tom, you bring up all of those guys that could be in the crosshairs of a exit interview type situation in January. The one that resonates with me, and I didn't see this coming from my own viewpoint, vantage point, is Elliott Wolf. Because I wasn't one of those that was like, oh, you kept around a guy that was already in the building. That's just so dumb. You should have gone and got a GM. I thought this guy had a pretty good resume. He was kind of born and bred for this lifestyle and the father, the whole thing. And yet, when I look back on it now and I look at everything not named Drake May that occurred last March and April, I'm thoroughly unimpressed. And heading into what I now deem the latest most important offseason in Patriots history to surround Drake May with talent, right?
Yeah, they all at this point, they're all vital.
Absolutely. And this is the latest most important offseason. I'm feeling less confident in saying, Elliott Wolf, here's $140 million. Here's the number three pick in the draft. Let's go surround Drake with stuff that'll make him good. Do you have similar trepidation at this point? And do you think internally there will be trepidation there?
I have had that for months. I have had that since he sat there at that pre-draft press conference and acted as if he had no concept of what it meant when people said the Patriots are not built to draft a quarterback right now. They should build around him. I can understand disagreeing with it because you see somebody like a Drake May who could be a phenomenal player and be the tide that lifts all boats. But to pretend that that's an off-the-wall suggestion, which, yeah, was my suggestion, but I think other people think it too, is ludicrous. What does that? He said, what does that mean that you're not ready to support a quarterback? And he went on in that answer to say that he had NFL-level wide receivers, NFL-level offensive linemen, and he went on to proceed after the draft to say how good Jukes Okorafor or Caden Wallace could be at the left tackle position, though neither had played there. He was part of the decision-making processes since he's gotten here that helped drive this roster to 31st or 32nd in the NFL. So he's on watch virtually more than anyone. I just don't think that – I don't think ownership feels the same level of urgency and dismay with him. That if you really parse the decisions he's made, you look at it and say, what is he doing? Does he know what he's doing? So, I think that if you have another top five pick and you have $130 million worth of cap space and you can't just re-sign all your own guys again, you have to make a trade. If you can't find anyone in free agency, and I don't blame him for the free agency haul that he didn't have in part because it was not a good free agency crop, but if you can't conjure up a trade, conjure up some better middle-class players on your team, see you later.
We're talking with Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston, in Quick Slants. And, Tom, in your Quick Slants poll this week, I thought it was a very interesting one. They're all interesting. I like this one, though. It was about the three rookie quarterbacks who were drafted 1, 2, 3. And do you think the Patriots drafted the right one? Would you rather have May? Would you rather have Williams? How did you vote in that? And I think May was like a runaway winner at like 66% or something. How would you vote in that? And do you think that the people voting in it were lying to themselves?
I think recency bias might have entered into it if it had been the week before when poor Drake got concussed and Jaden Daniels threw a Hail Mary touchdown to win a game. It probably would have been a much closer race. I think May had like 63% of the vote, then Daniels had 35% and Williams had like 4%. But I think May is the best fit for this team. I think May's build, his physical toughness, his mental toughness, what appears to be an unbelievably non-eccentric, non-self-focused ability as a teammate continues to set him apart from, you know, what we would generally call the millennial athlete. He is, I haven't seen him on social media really at all. I haven't heard a peep from any of those types of things.
And he's Gen Z, by the way. He's not a millennial. He's too young for millennial. He's Gen Z, I think.
Maybe right? You're right. I don't know. All I know is I'm Generation X, and we've hosted everybody. Just minding our own business, being quiet, and hosting the whole country. So I think that he is the best fit for this team at this time. He's probably not the most talented or polished right now, but to be able to endure the physical and mental aspects of being in this city for the next, hopefully, 4 to 10 years, he's the right guy.
So – where do we go from here? Because I agree with you. Everybody, I love Drake May. I love his attitude. I love talking to him on Mondays. I think it comes naturally, the leadership, everything. And then I look at everything else not named Gonzo, and there's just nothing there. And there's a half a season to play, and they're moving Mike Onwenu to yet another position in the offensive line. He's got to run around for 12 seconds while Michael Jordan hops up and down and looks in circles. Like, where does this offense and team go over the second half of the season to make sure you're trying to develop Drake May without getting him killed?
Friend, find your Logan Mankins, find your Matt Light, find your better, more. If you have to spend a crap ton of money on some of the best position coaches ever to grace the planet, do it. Because it's coaching. It's coaching at the wide receiver position right now. I think Scott Peters has done a good job with the absolute stack of below-average players he's gotten. And God bless them, they've tried. But they need to spend their draft picks on mean, smart, nasty, big, physical offensive linemen.
But how do we get to the finish line? I agree with you on all of that. The problem is we got to put Drake May out there for the next 2.5 months. Like, how do
you? Oh, you mean the immediate? What are you going to do now?
Yeah, like
you
how do you
spread? You just do run and shoot. You just go run and shoot.
Because I really
I'm serious.
He is the centerpiece of the offense. We were just talking about it. He's one of the best running quarterbacks in this short span, and mostly because he's running for his life. I have no faith in his receivers, not named Hunter Henry, and the running game isn't what it was supposed to be. So therefore, there's no play action game. They were supposed to be a screen team, but they can't screen. It's almost like I really don't know what to do to have any hope for Drake May to succeed and survive for the next 2.5 months?
I'd go run and shoot. I honestly would. I would use a ton of spread. I would use a ton of no huddle, 2 minute. And, oh, so we went 3-and-out with 3 incompletions? Sorry. You know what? We're going to have a 3rd overall pick. We're not going to have these another stupid running play, as Eddie Duckworth used to call them. ASRP, another stupid running play. Not going to do that in the middle of the line. So you're in 3rd and 8, and then it's a free-for-all for poor Drake May. You spread it out. You throw, 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 throw. And if it's you have to punt, get it to Bryce, let him punt, play defense. And your defense can't stop anybody? No, it's too bad. You lost 41-10. Good deal.
All right, before we let you go, Tommy, it's time for the flex of the game.
Is that crazy?
No,
that
it's not
totally
crazy.
That
is not crazy.
No, it's not crazy.
It's what they're doing right now.
It's what they are.
Continue doing it, yeah.
Right.
Don't pretend you're something that you're not. It's like, you know, I'm going to try and dunk. No, you can't. Stop doing that.
All right. It's time for the Flex of the Game presented by FlexCar. Ditch the dealership. Save thousands with FlexCar. It's the Flex of the Game on Sunday in Chicago here, Tommy.
Flex of the Game is for one time the Patriots to stop being the magic elixir for every team that's down on its luck. Think about it. 52-14 was what happened the week before to
Tennessee. Yeah.
Who the Patriots just lose
yeah.
to.
Yeah. You told us when the Titans. Teams that play the Lions always
Titans.
Lose the next
yeah.
week or something.
Okay. So the Titans have lost 52-40. Yeah, I did. That was a flex last week. The Niners were down on their luck. The Jacksonville Jaguars were on the verge of quitting. The Miami Dolphins had like 4 yards of offense in a primetime game. Each one of those teams got across the line from the Patriots and needed something good to happen, and it happened. This week you have the Chicago Bears, who lost 29-9. You have players openly, DJ Moore, saying, have you guys quit on your coach? He said, I'm not going to say no. Well, that's a bad sign. So will the Patriots, for once, not be the magic elixir for a team down on its luck? They're going to flex up and not let that happen. That's the flex of the game.
All right. That's Tommy Curran. Thanks so much for the time today. Always good to talk with you, and we'll talk to you Sunday for sure on Football Sunday here on WEEI and next Thursday as well. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. Thanks so much.
See you guys. Thank you.
All right. Tommy Curran joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Good stuff there from him. We will return to the Bruins after this because the Bruins, we haven't talked about all day long so far, have a game tonight against the Calgary Flames, which I believe that is Linus Allmark's new team. So they'll be going at it tonight. And Jim Montgomery, I think, is getting heat that maybe deserves to be going to other people. I think Jim Montgomery has not had a good season, but I think he's getting a lot of heat that should maybe be going to Sweeney and maybe even going to Cam Neely. And we'll talk about that right after this.
Now, more of Afternoons with Arcand and Hard on WEEI.
Jim Montgomery, after the Bruins got blanked 4-0 by the Maple Leafs the other night to fall to 6-7-1 and 4th in the Atlantic Division. Talking about the special teams, which admittedly have been bad, and I'm not going to try and say that he's been a positive influence on that or really anything when it comes to this team. I don't think he's gotten them off to a good start. I don't think a lot of these guys are ready to go, but I do think that Jim Montgomery shouldering the entirety of what we've seen so far here to start the year, and it's been ugly. I mean, by Bruin standards, this is about as bad of a start as we've seen in a while. I mean, they have not. They usually get off to much better, much hotter starts than this. For whatever, better or for worse, they come into the season, they're ready to go. They did with Montgomery the last 2 years. That was the thing with Cassidy going all the way back to Claude. I feel like in the early stages of these seasons, and stats back it up recently to be sure, the Bruins are always ready to start the year, and they get off to good starts, and they beat the bad teams, and they have a good record. And they end up, you know, at the top of or near the top of the Atlantic Division, and that's been the case for a couple years now in a row. It's not the exact same team. They've lost some guys. There's been some turnover, sure. All that's true. But this, to me, is not just a coaching question. I think at some point, we have to take a good, long, serious look at Don Sweeney and Cam Neely and their philosophies and their strategies going into free agency, the idea of bringing them back to this big, bad Bruins type of team with these bigger guys. Max Johnson just got optioned down to Providence, cleared waivers. No one wanted him. And I just sort of feel like, you know, this is all, and Max Jones, not Max Johnson, excuse me. And I think that that's sort of the point, is that you haven't, you weren't expecting them necessarily to load up like some kind of super team here in the offseason. I wasn't expecting that. They spent the money that they spent on guys that they thought could come in and help, but they haven't been great fits. And I don't think they're bad fits because Jim Montgomery doesn't know how to coach them. I think they just made some bad decisions. I think that they've brought in some players who they expected fit a profile, and they thought that profile was going to work for them, and they threw them out there, and nothing worked except for that fourth line. And then what do? They break up the fourth line and, you know, jumble everything up, which, again, I saw the lines today. They're all different again. And it just seems to me like that's the heart and soul of why this team is having such a hard time. I don't think it's because Montgomery forgot how to coach. I think they made some bad personnel decisions in the offseason, and they're getting no heat for it at all.
Just this offseason?
Yes, I'd say this offseason. And maybe going back a little ways, but you know, last year I thought it was mostly positive stuff. And I thought coming into the year, they were positive upgrades. Like, you know, Max Jones was a former first-round pick, and Zadorov is a big, bruising defenseman, which I didn't have any problem with at the time. And Lindholm, I thought, was going to be a good top-line centerman. None of that's really panned out. You haven't seen really any of these new guys pan out all that much. And at some point, we're 14 games into the season. Like, at some point, you want to see that. And you just haven't yet.
Because I also have questions about some of the long... I mean, Pasta's good. Now, we can have our quips with penalties and things he's been doing that have been unfortunate.
Getting benched, too, yeah.
Yeah, but he's a goal scorer. Like, he was going to get paid somewhere. You needed him as your central goal scorer, mm-hmm. whatever. McAvoy, is he living up to his paycheck?
No, I'd say he isn't.
Because I think that some of these things, like your highest paid players, and early on, I would probably say the same thing about Swayman isn't living up to his contract. Mm-hmm. So some of it is re-signings, is keeping your own players. Some of it is getting old. Brad Marchand's getting older. Like I think there's various layers to if you're going to quibble with the roster makeup. And certainly they haven't gotten immediate return on the investment of the offseason. So we just did it with Elliot Wolf. We just did it with Tommy Curran talking about, well, you had a plan and you went about it and you spent a lot of money and doesn't look like that plan is working, right? So that falls on the guys enacting the plan. Now with the Bruins, there's the sort of double layer of Neely, Sweeney, mm-hmm. like who do you really blame? Who's really enacting it? And you brought up the big bad Bruins and yeah. this idea that they got bigger and slower in the offseason. Now that certainly feels like that would be a Neely thing, right? Like he just sort of who he is, who he was, the whole thing. It feels like that could be a Neely thing. But I also think it's on everybody. And when it's on everybody, like we talked about who's playing well. Crickets.
Yeah.
Crickets. Well, that's not just new guys. That's not just high-priced guys. That's not just, you know, holdover guys. That's everybody. And when it's so universal, I think that's when you say, what's going on with the coaching? Like, why is everyone underperforming or mm-hmm. fail? And then you mix in the idea to feed our own doubts is, well, they could have given him an extension in the offseason if they wanted to. Why didn't they give him an extension? Because is it just a traditional, he asked for X, they countered with Y, and they were too far apart, and okay, we'll have to kick this can down the road? Or did they have some doubts as to who their coach is?
Yeah.
Like, is he really the guy for the long term? And I know that Razor was on with the Midday guys, Jones and Keefe, and still kind of thinks that they love Montgomery and Montgomery's their coach for the foreseeable future. And it's like, okay, then why isn't he signed? And he literally answered, I don't know.
Right. And Scoops Keefe is hearing the exact opposite of that.
Right.
So, you know, that's something. By the way, Linus Allmark is in Ottawa, not Calgary. Got my Canadian teams mixed up.
No,
my apologies.
Nobody would have noted that on the text or Twitch chat.
It certainly, they certainly did, and they were certainly right, and I apologize 1,000 times, Ted Sarandis style. Riley Tuft was another kid they brought in, another depth signing, 6'6", whatever he is. I mean, they bring in these big guys. Tuft was a first-round pick, too, I think. And he just got assigned to Providence a week ago, too. Like, these guys, they get here, and it's not fitting in. They're not working out. It's not really happening for them. And the guys that they do have playing out there are adjusting not so great to their new line mates. And all of it is frustrating. All of it is frustrating to see. And to see it all get lumped onto Montgomery, who you're right. I mean, you have to look at coaching at some level here. But this is a new team with a lot of new guys who aren't fitting in. And it's not just because the coaching scheme isn't exactly right. It's because there are these big, lumbering, slow players. players who aren't really necessarily, in my opinion anyway, and I think obviously the opinion of the team too, which is why they're down in the Providence right now, ready to contribute to this team.
So would you blow it up? Or like, are you going, so we were talking about doing like a Monty watch. Should there be a Neely watch? A Sweeney watch? A Neely Sweeney watch?
There should be a Sweeney watch, yes. I mean, I think there should be a Sweeney watch.
Because that's unfortunate, because you signed Lindholm for, what, 7 years?
Yeah.
I mean, you're on the hook. You've made some deals here that you're on the hook for uh-huh. for a long time.
Yeah.
That's concerning.
It is.
If that's the answer. If this is just a poorly constructed roster, that's problematic. Because you can move around some of the complementary pieces.
Right.
But your core is signed.
You're stuck with a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
And I think you can still build a good team around Lindholm and Pasternak and McAvoy and the other guys who were signed long term.
Swayman, like.
I still think that's possible to do. Those are good players. It's just right now, you have a mix. You have a group out there that I just don't think has that same kind of chemistry. And maybe there's more to it than that. But if you're going to put it all on Jim Montgomery, I don't think that's fair. I just don't. 617-779-7937. When we return, the Boston Celtics. Maybe underestimated the Golden State Warriors a little bit. Steve Kerr out-coaching Joe Mazzulla, and the Celtics got outworked. We'll discuss a tough night on Causeway Street right after this.